will file.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself back into the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Senator Elliott.
The first bill for consideration this afternoon is Senate file number 9. Will the reading clerk read the bill?
Senate file number 9, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, Juvenile Detention Facility Standards, an act relating to juvenile education.
Senator Ross, what is your pleasure?
Excuse me a minute, Senator. I have to read this.
Sorry.
It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, S. Meyer, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions. Senator Ross, Chairman.
Senator Ross, what is your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so with a do-pass recommendation on Senate File 9. There is a standing committee amendment, and I'd ask that it be read in at this time.
Senate File 9, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, lines 14 through 24.
Mr. Chairman, I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, and we'll discuss it in conjunction with the bill. This is not a very lengthy bill. What this bill is a companion to two bills that your Joint Judiciary Committee passed in the interim. One is a juvenile detention facilities criteria bill. That's starting in the House. That's House Bill 12. And then we have Senate File 9, which is juvenile detention facilities standards. What this bill does is it charges the sheriffs and chiefs in consultation with other operators of juvenile detention facilities to come up with, in the state of Wyoming, uniform standards based on nationally recognized criteria for the operation of hardware secure and staff secure facilities. The standing committee amendment basically changes the definition of hardware secure facility on page 2 and makes it consistent with House Bill 12. If you look at the lines 4 through 7 on the Standing Committee Amendment, you will see that it really says the exact same thing as lines 14 through 24. On page 2 of the bill, but we just thought it would be more consistent that there be a consistent definition of hardware secure detention facility in both statutes. Should they pass, there wouldn't be any question about what we meant. So what is a hardware secure facility detention facility? That is one that's characterized with locks and doors and is more restrictive than a staff secure facility. You'll see on page 3 of the bill that staff secure detention facility is defined, and that is identical to the definition in House Bill 12 on admission criteria. So they were to report back to the committee. And with their findings, by January 1 of 2012. And we would ask for your favorable consideration of the Standing Committee Amendment at this time.
Are you ready for the question on the Standing Committee Amendment? All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File Number 9, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment has perished.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We're back on the bill.
So, in essence, ladies and gentlemen, what we're trying to do is to come up with some consistent standards for hardware and staff secure juvenile detention facilities that will provide some uniformity throughout the state for these facilities. There are two or three nationally recognized standards, but rather than pick out necessarily one, we have just suggested that those that operate these facilities come up with those standards and report back to Joint Judiciary by November of 2012. And what we're hoping for is that they will implement criteria that will be useful in each of the local jurisdictions. Now, there are, and the plan is in the future, to have, and we need to be careful about this because they're not necessarily designated as regional facilities, but five primarily regional kinds of hardware secure facilities: Casper, Cheyenne, Gillette, Rock Springs, and Riverton has a co-located facility. And then come up with some criteria for staff secure facilities, which are less restrictive than the hardware secure facilities. Hardware secure facilities being implemented primarily for those juveniles who are a risk to the public or are perpetrators of violent crime or something of that nature. And then, of course, the lowest rung on this whole thing that isn't in this bill is your shelter care that you see in Title 14, which is your juvenile code. So I'd urge your favorable consideration of this bill and stand for any questions.
Senator Scott.
Chairman, I've got a question on this bill, and maybe I'm getting too cynical from having served down here for a while, but every time it seems to me we go to a bunch of experts to get a set of standards, we wind up with something that is tremendously gold-plated, because their tendency is to put in everything they might ever want to have and not worry too much about how much it's going to cost. And what happens is we pass a bill like this, says go to nationally recognized standards. They do. And the next thing that happens is that when the outfits in the state go to implement them, they come screaming to us for more money and saying, you made us implement these standards that are super expensive. And as I read this bill, the sheriff and the chief are going to work these standards over, and then our facility's got to comply with this. And my question to you is, what is there in this to prevent those standards from being unreasonably gold-plated? Has the committee looked into what the standards are? And what protection do we have that we aren't setting up a monster that's going to come after our general fund? And maybe the evidence is overwhelming that these are good standards and that we need them and they keep us out of all kinds of other trouble. But I'm just generically afraid of standards set by experts, because they do tend to be high cost.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Great questions, and we asked some of those same ones. I think, first of all, the group that's going to set the standards are actually actively working on that now. That standard is basically by I hesitate to call them regional facilities, but they're kind of de facto regional facilities. We have about seven secure facilities around the state, and so who's working those standards are basically the people who are operating those seven facilities. And so when you look at those, they're going out and they're not necessarily hiring experts. These standards already exist. These standards are already out there. They're pulling from those and they're deciding for themselves what standards they want to look at. I think the control that you have for that, on the expense side is it's their nickel. The cost that it takes to operate a juvenile facility does come out of the same pocket and the same pile of money that it is to operate an adult facility, and that's the local county budget. And so I think that there is an order of restraint. Now, they can come back. They can certainly come down and say, well, now you've issued these things. You need to pay us more. But ultimately, that responsibility lies with the sheriff of each individual county, and particularly with those sheriffs that are operating or in charge of, even if they've contracted with a private for-profit company to operate that facility, those costs still come out of the jail. Now, there is some cost sharing. I want to be perfectly honest with my fellow senator from Natrona County and the rest of you. There is some cost sharing that is occurring now on some of these juvenile facilities, and that there is some help that's coming out of the Department of Family Services to help assist with that, particularly on some construction, and in some cases, even keeping those facilities open because they're very expensive to operate. You know, really what you're talking about in our particular county is this new facility. We're talking about $11 million to take care of basically 14 to 16 kids. And, I mean, so they are very expensive. But ultimately, if we don't do this, if we don't move in this direction, the other side is we end up in the exact same boat that we found ourselves in education. Now we end up with these equal protection issues because kids in one part of the state are being treated differently and have other advantages or are disadvantaged as compared to other kids in the state. It's the right direction to move, but ultimately I think that the direct answer to your question is I believe that it's self-limiting because ultimately the buck stops at the county and municipal level, and they have to be careful recognizing that whatever standards they impose, ultimately they're the ones who are responsible to pay for the implementation and the maintenance of those standards.
Senator Schiffer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple questions on the bill. Do these same standards apply to the boys' school in Worland and the girls' school in Sheridan? When we start talking about detention, will the standards apply in those two institutions? And the second area, when we talk about juvenile detention facilities, are they talking about the psych evaluation holds that sometimes judges put on juveniles when they're going into juvenile court? Are we talking the same standard for those type of a hold as what we're talking about in this bill?
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With regards to the boys' school and the girls' school, I'm not necessarily sure. I think we need to find that out. I mean, it wasn't part of the discussion, and perhaps other committee members would know, but I believe that those are state-run facilities versus these facilities that are envisioned now, which are county located. I want to point out that the funds to build, like the Casper facility and the Cheyenne facility, to do some modifications to the Riverton facility, which is co-located with an adult jail, and over in Rock Springs, their facility, and Gillette just built a brand new one, so they're good. That money's coming from stimulus money that the governor was able to secure to build these facilities. regard to the issue concerning sight and sound kinds of barriers, and I thought that's what the good senator said, or initial hold on a child when they get the child. That is always problematic. The criteria bill, House Bill 12, sets up an assessment form that will be utilized to assess the juvenile as to whether or not, you know, they have a risk of hurting other people or whatnot, need to go to a hardware secure facility or staff secure or shelter care or returned home. But ultimately, this particular bill does not address those 24-hour holds or those moments in time where they're trying to find the adult. What this particular bill is addressing, of course, is the hardware and staff secure facilities, and trying to come up with criteria or standards that will fit Wyoming. In response to the good senator from Natrona County, I do not believe it's the vision of this of the Judiciary Committee or the testimony that was involved that we would adopt blanketly some national standard, because of the vast differences we have in all of our communities. We are beyond a rural state. We're a frontier state. And in certain places, the state of Wyoming, it's just not practical that we can do things like they might do in Connecticut or somewhere else where they have, a far different kind of population. So the thought is that they would come back with certain criteria, and that those locales would, as long as we're having some consistent standards throughout the state, that we would be at least treating our juveniles on a equal footing, the equal protection argument that was made by the good senator from Natrona County also. I think that's critical to how we deal with this population in the future. Hopefully I've answered your question, Senator Schiffer.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I hear the equal protection argument, and that makes a good deal of sense to me. But I'm still concerned about these national standards. And if you look on page 1, lines 14 and 15, it says, shall develop and implement uniform standards based upon the nationally recognized criteria. My question is, should we soften that language a bit? And instead of saying based upon, should we say after consideration of, or something like that, to make it clear that the group here has the ability to modify those to fit our Wyoming conditions and to keep the expense within reason?
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, that's an excellent a point, and we'll certainly be open to modifications in that language, because I think that's basically what we thought we were doing. I didn't view the language as it currently is as being real restrictive, but if we would like to loosen that up some, we certainly can take care of that on a second or third reading amendment.
President Hines.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I would ask the chairman of the committee if I'm interpreting this right. The way I read it, we're authorizing sheriffs to implement standards starting the 1st of July of this year, and they don't report back to the Joint Judiciary Committee for another year and a half or so, and we really don't get to see what their standards would be, that, and they can go to their county commissioners and say, well, the state says you got to fund this. So I'm wondering if I'm interpreting this correctly or not.
Senator Ross?
Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to make sure I answer this correctly. 14-4-117 is that those standards are to be developed and reported to the Joint Judiciary by November 15th, 2012. Quite frankly, I do not believe that this statute envisions that they will already implement them. Some of the facilities aren't even built yet. So they report to Judiciary on the 15th, and that's what you see in paragraph B on section 2, where it starts in July 10, 2001, is for them to do that. The actual standards would not be implemented until January 1 of 2012.
Senator Sessions.
Mr. Chairman, I think the discussion we had when we finally came up with the idea that the sheriffs and the chiefs were the entity to do these standards, and I think the discussion was that they needed to be able to start now. They needed to start with the design, and upon their agreement, they're the ones that are in control of this whole thing. And implementing where necessary. We have some that won't be ready, but also the one in Gillette probably might be ready as these standards get going along. So I think that was the thinking behind that. And then Judiciary, I suppose, if we hear all kinds of stuff, can ask that they report sooner on their progress. But I guess, you know, and I talked to our sheriff, I talked to our gentlemen that we visit with here all the time and stuff, and they're working diligently to get these things into place. And he did tell me that it was a bit harder than he envisioned, but they were working through it. So that was my understanding.
Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. Chairman, as I trace through the effective dates here, and it's a little complex in this one. The first section where they develop the standards is effective this coming July 1st. And then on January 1st, 2012, you have the rest of the act effective. So you've got the prohibition on detaining a minor in a hardware secure or staff secure facility unless the facility has adopted the standard goes into effect on January 1st, 2012. And the report to the Judiciary Committee is November 15, 2012. So it does seem that we're going to implement the standards first and then the Judiciary Committee is going to look at them and I suppose see how they're working. But this bill does, as I read it, turn them loose to develop and implement those standards. I suppose if they did something wild and we heard about it at the 2011 general session, we could modify the law. But it does look like this act gives them full authorization to go ahead and implement.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe that you're right. I think you're interpreting the effective dates exactly right. I can tell you that the testimony was that they actually wanted to push it out another year, and I think the comment was we wanted to keep the gun to their head. whether it was concealed or not, I don't remember. But ultimately, the question is probably it's going to be difficult to implement by that time. We're anticipating we'll probably bump this out a year, but nevertheless, we wanted to keep that going. I think that when you do that, you have the people who are going to be in charge of this are the ones who are going to be developing it and implementing it. And if we want to play with the effective date on that, I think we certainly can do that. That's kind of where this thing is at. We would like to see standards developed. I think there'll be places that won't be able to implement these at that point in time, and at least we'll know that coming forward. We probably will have to revisit this next year just to make sure and verify where we're at on this thing and see what we need to do with these dates, regardless of whether or not we amend these effective dates, these different effective dates that are in the bill this year.
Any further questions? Are we ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 9, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 9 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for consideration is Senate File 31. We'll have the reading clerk read the file.
Senate File Number 31, sponsored by Senator Bebout, Federal Natural Resources Policy Account, an act relating to the Federal Natural Resources Policy Account. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, which reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin. Senator Larson, Chairman.
Senator Larson, what is your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, it do so with a do-pass recommendation on Senate File 31 and the further reading of the bill be dispensed with. Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment attached to the bill, and I would ask that that be read in at this time.
Senate File 31, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 21.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the Standing Committee Amendment, and to explain both the bill and the Standing Committee Amendment, I'd like to call on Senator Bebout.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen of the Senate, Senate File 31 deals with the Federal Natural Resources Policy Account. This is an account that was created by the legislature in the late 90s to give the state of Wyoming and local governments the opportunity through the governor to have some assistance in participating in decisions by federal managers of our public lands and the impact those decisions made upon the state of Wyoming and our counties. And, Mr. Chairman, the purpose of this bill is to look at that existing language and then expand it in a couple of ways. And if you look at the second page of the bill, Mr. Chairman, that is the guts of what we're trying to do. And under lines 14 through 16, and this is where a county has the opportunity to participate as a cooperating agency in the decisions made by federal agencies on those federal lands. We add one more category to the list that's included in that, and that's participation in the implementation of environmental impact statements and associated records of decision. So we expanded it to another area very important to the local governments and management of these lands. Further, Mr. Chairman, if you look at lines 18 through 22, It gives some direction to the Attorney General. Still remember that it's up to the discretion of the governor who may expend these. But I think these decisions are important enough that we ought to tell the Attorney General that if a county comes to you as a cooperating agency and says, Mr. Attorney General, I'm having some trouble in a decision that's being made on an RMP in my particular county, whether it deals with grazing, whether it deals with mineral development, whether it deals with recreation, I want some help. I want to have you give a priority to spending these funds to help my county out. And, of course, the governor has the ultimate say in whether or not that happens. I think it's important as a matter of public policy for this body to give that direction and that and put that as terms of how these funds shall be spent. Mr. Chairman, getting on to the Standing Committee Member Number 1, if you look at the bill on page 2, lines 21, we put internal capacity in the language, and there was some concern by the county commissioners, certainly from my county, that we were asking them to grow county government. I will tell you that was not the intent of the bill, so we changed that, and that's the purpose of the amendment. Mr. Chairman, as we delete internal capacity and replace that word, that with the word ability. And with that, Mr. Chairman, if there's any questions on the Standing Committee Amendment, I would gladly answer them. Otherwise, I would call for the question on the Standing Committee Amendment.
Are we ready for the question on the Standing Committee Amendment? All those in favor of Senator Bebout's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to the Senate File 31, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The amendment has passed. We are back on the bill.
I didn't move it.
Senator Larson.
Mr. Chairman, point of order. The motion on the amendment was my motion, Senator Larson, so that just standing for correcting the record.
I beg your pardon. I'll restate the motion. All those in favor of Senator Larson's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 31, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senator Larson's amendment has passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I was wondering if the sponsor of the bill could bring us up to date as to how much money is currently in that federal natural resources policy account, what the source of the funding is, and the fiscal note is a little fuzzy. I was wondering if he might have any idea of what the cost of adding these different expenditures might, just an estimate on a per county basis. I'm still trying to wrestle with this concept in my mind.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I checked on that account about a week ago, and my recollection is there's $1.388 million that is still in that account. Mr. Chairman, as I understand and remember, that money was a direct appropriation from the general fund that occurred several years ago. I can't tell you exactly when it happened. I don't think it was touched during the last budget session nor the supplemental budget session we had last year. Mr. Chairman, I wish I could tell you what these different actions cost per occurrence. I don't think you can really do that because in some cases you may have an RMP in a huge regional area that deals with a lot of multiple issues that requires a lot of assistance possibly, and others may not be quite that complicated. I will tell you that when we heard the testimony in the committee from the county commissioners, obviously they were very supportive of this and have used this in the past as a tool to assist them in these management decisions. And the one thing that I will also tell you that it deals with the counties that have primarily a lot of BLM land in them and national forests, so the counties in the southeastern part of the state have not really participated in it. And the last question is, all of this, of course, is contingent on what the governor may or may not approve.
Senator Sessions.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think that it's a good idea to allow counties to participate or to even, you know, give them additional funding to do this. But my question is, do we have any idea about what actually that money has been spent on the last 3 or 4 years, and if we give counties preference, what is going to happen to the other things? They will be bumped back because it's just a finite amount of money that's in that account. So I'd like to know what is already in the works, I guess.
Senator Bebelt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good questions. And if you look at the existing statutes of the law, it really tells you why we set this up in the first place. And of course, the big reason is for counties. And there are some cases, of course, where the local or state government is affected relative to NEPA and those kinds of things in our revenue stream. But primarily, the focus is on counties. So if the focus is on counties, let's tell the AG that we think it's a priority when they look at these things and they come to you. Rather than to try to remember all the different funding mechanisms what we had in the past couple of years, I'll get that information, Mr. Chairman, and if this bill moves forward, I'll present it on second reading.
Senator Cole.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. For example, for the good senator from Laramie County, we've used it significantly up in Park County. Through the commissioners up there with the Sylvan Pass issue, snowmobiles in Yellowstone, wolves. At one time, the Forest Service came out with a new management plan that encompassed a lot of private land right west of Cody there. So we have used it significantly. I think you'll find that Teton County has also used it on wolf issues. Those are just some examples of how I think it's been spent.
Any further questions? Are we ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Larson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate file number 36, say aye. Those, excuse me, 31, I misread it. Those opposed, no. Senate File 31 is passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for consideration is Senate File 22.
Senate File number 22, sponsored by the Transportation Committee. State Active Duty Medical Expense Reimbursement, an act relating to the National Guard. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Escobel, Geis, Landon Von Fladern, Senator Von Fladern, Chairman.
Senator Von Fladern, what is your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When the Committee of the Whole rises to report, I requested to do so with a favorable recommendation for Senate File 22, State Active Duty Medical Expenses. There is a Standing Committee Amendment. I'd ask that it be read in at this time.
Senate File 22, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 3.
And, Mr. Chairman, I move Standing Committee Number 1 to Senate File 22. And to explain this fine bill, I yield the floor to Senator Landon.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks to our good Chairman of Transportation. Senate File 22, fellow senators, is a joint Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs interim bill. Came to our attention because of a gap that exists in our system of repaying our state active duty servicemen. This bill would add language that provides for a reimbursement benefit to our service members when called to duty, any duty performed in state active duty. For example, if our National Guard troops were called out of state or called to assist a municipality, a county, the gap exists in the event of a service member contracting an illness or a medical condition that falls outside of workers' compensation. And so, therefore, it came to the attention of the committee that some of our service members were facing some charges that really they shouldn't have to bear. If we go to the bill for a moment, and I'll get to the standing committee amendment in just a moment, a couple of spots, page 2, you'll notice on line 6 and 7, reimbursement of uncompensated medical expenses provided for in 199403. That appears again over on page 3. Speaking about the amendment real quickly, we'll go to that. If you notice on page 2, section B refers to workers' compensation, and in committee we realized that the section was unnecessary. So really what the amendment does is go to the meat of the bill, which is on page 3. On page 3, that's the rulemaking authority that we would provide on behalf of the Adjutant General. And that page 3, line 8, is where the meat of the amendment also falls in. The Adjutant General shall determine, pursuant to rules and regulations adopted under this subsection, whether those medical expenses incurred by an officer or enlisted man are the consequence of state active duty. That's consistent with other rules and regs within the military. Mr. Chairman, that is in essence the standing committee amendment. Since the good chairman has moved it, I would call for the question on the amendment.
Are we ready for the question on the amendment? All those in favor of Senator Von Platen's motion to adopt the standing committee amendment number 1 to Senate file number 22, please say aye. Those opposed, no. The amendment number 1 is carried. We are back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill will authorize the Wyoming Military Department to charge a requesting entity for uncompensated active duty status related medical expenses. I think it's something that we need to do for our active duty servicemen. I would do my best to answer any questions. Thank you.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to make sure that we have the two different ways that the guys can go out. If our guard is called up and the governor actually transfers command to the Army or the Air Force, those guys are covered 100% while they're on active duty once the governor's transferred command. But if it's the guys in state that would, say, go to a tornado or something like that, those are the guys that we're talking about in this bill?
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, to the good senator of Natrona County. That's exactly the way I read the bill. This bill would also authorize the guard to reimburse those monies that would be requested could either reimburse the military department for monies that they fronted to our servicemen or the servicemen directly, because there might be some copay in certain circumstances where a military member might have to incur some expense. When they are on active duty, that is correct. They do have their own military insurance. It's those other situations to which you refer that this is where the gap exists.
Senator Schiffer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just so I'm really understanding this, the entity that's liable for the medical expenses in this case would be the entity that asked for the help from the guard. For example, if say here in this fair city, they had another flood like they did a couple years ago over Crow Creek or wherever it was, and they called in the guard, then the city of Cheyenne is liable for those medical expenses? Do I understand that correctly?
Senator Von Platter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, actually, they'd be on state duty at that point. Well, what this refers to, by having it in statute, it's for illnesses, not injuries. Let's get that, make sure we understand that. And also to be like Arkansas or New Orleans when they call us down for the hurricane. Then it's a requesting agency as another state. When it's the governor appointing them, they're working for the state of Wyoming. And that would be a flood in Cheyenne, tornado in Wright, KC flood, any of those. They're under the governor then. The KC is not responsible for getting a bill from the National Guard. It would be the National Guard taking care of their own people. And by this bill, if the person became sick, as in caught the flu while they were on tour there, this would buy prescriptions if he didn't have coverage. This would help with his deductible if he had to pay his own out of cash pocket for that, because that's not an injury under workers' comp. That's all it does. In the state, he's working for the state. Outside the state would be the requesting agency at that point.
Senator Esquibel.
Mr. Chairman, I might add also that the bill excludes medical expenses that are covered by a Guard member's individual health care insurance policy, just in case anybody might be wondering about that part. There's no double dipping.
Any further questions? Question has been called. All those in favor of Senator Von Flatern's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it does so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 22, please say aye. Those opposed, no. Senate File 22 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 42.
Senate File Number 42, sponsored by the Education Committee, School Finance, Student Enrichment Instruction, an act relating to school finance. It was assigned to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Massey, C. Meyer, Peterson, Townsend, Senator Nicholas excused, Senator C. Meyer, acting chairman.
Senator Coe, what is your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with the do-pass recommendation on Senate File 42. This is the Student Enrichment Program Bill to establish and fund supplemental assistance programs for student enrichment. It creates a criteria and imposes duties upon the Department of Education. Then it imposes reporting requirements and provides for a $450,000 appropriation from the school foundation program. Okay. It's only for the 2010-11 school year. It's in addition to the block grant that all the districts receive, and it's only during the summer session. A district out there that wants to apply for one of these grants may apply on or before April 15th of 2010. Included in that application is a description of the program, evidence that program is research-based, documentation of the use of any national sources they might employ out there, and a plan for evaluation of the student program to see what the progress has been. Then, on or before May 15th of 2010, the application review process shall be completed by the Department of Education, including a basis for the grant, including criteria that include research-based opportunities to exceed state and local programs, linkage to academic standards, being able to distinguish that learning opportunities are different from the ordinary district programs, and then an evaluation of the program. On or before October 1st of 2010, districts receiving these grants report back to the Department of Education. They have to include an analysis and evaluation of program impact on student performance and enrichment strategies. The Department of Education then compiles the information and has to report back to the Joint Education Committee before December 1st, 2010. Just to give you some ideas on this program, it's about 3 years into this program as we speak. It was established to provide student enrichment instruction to Wyoming students. The intention of this pilot project was to help students meet or exceed state and local standards in core academic subjects by offering a range of high-quality opportunities for academic enrichment that support student learning and youth development principles. The last time we opened this up with the same amount of money, we had 27 school districts requesting funding for projects costing more than $2.5 million. The requests ranged from $3,120 to $217,530. Some of the programs that serve these students, and this is designed not to deal with at-risk kids, is to deal with kids that want to further enrich their educational opportunities. Some of the examples, kindergarten through 12 and address standards in math, science, language arts, fine and performing arts, social studies, physical education, health, technology, and career vocational. For example, Uinta County School District number 6 provided high school students the opportunity to earn academic credit in physical education, science, and computer technology. Albany County School District 1 received a $17,950 grant for summer art enrichment. And probably the one district out there that employed it more than anybody else that really loves this program is Campbell County 1. They had multiple summer learning classes and were awarded $103,000. They had 6 different 2-week classes of photography, logic games, sports training, flight, space, journalism news, problem solving, robotics, weather, environment, drama, outdoor food preparation, and a few other things. With that, Mr. Chairman, I try to answer questions on the bill. Remembering that the program is about 3 years old, this is the third year of the pilot project. Ask for favorable consideration on Senate File 42.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It sure sounds like this is a good program. And the questions I have, there's two of them. One, if it continues to develop and continues to do as well as it looks like it's done, is this going to be an add-on that every year we do the education budget, we're going to have more money to do it? Or is it somehow in the recalibration that's going to occur, maybe it's intertwined into that? That's the first question. And then the second question is there, do these school districts that want to do this have any skin in the game themselves? You know, sometimes it just helps if there's a way that they come up with something to try to make it work a little bit better.
Senator Coe.
Well, Mr. Chairman, clearly I think it'll be something that'll be discussed in recalibration. I can't tell you how we'll proceed. I would suspect that if we enlarge this program at all or propose enlarging it, it'll be funded outside the model, just like we fund, you know, instructional facilitators and other facets. And that's just my guess on the deal. It will definitely be discussed. The school districts, per se, don't have any skin in the game. This is something that they go out and, you know, try to find teachers that are willing to provide the additional time, and I'm sure that they get paid for doing that. But as far as I know, they don't have any skin in the game.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I rise with some trepidation on this issue because I suspect strongly that my school district may be one of the ones that participate. I don't know, but I suspect it. The question I've got is, you know, we've put an awful lot of money into education, and I've been one of those who has been the most consistent over the years in advocating that. And I'm not seeing the kind of performance that we ought to get given the amount of money that we've put into it. And specifically, I have here the Wyoming Education Summary that the State Department of Education put out last fall. And sure, all of you got, as I did, multiple copies of this thing. And it's very interesting reading. I look at the, and I'm going to pick on the fifth grade reading because it's the youngest, the reading assessment that they published here. The state average is 65.7% of the students are advanced or proficient. That means that about a third of the students, when they get to fifth grade, are not reading proficient. And that's a major problem, because as a student progresses through the system, if they don't have reading down pat, if they can't read well, they're going to be in academic trouble for the rest of their time in the academic system. They're going to be behind the eight ball, really, for the rest of their lives. It's so fundamental. And when you look at it, in 7% of the districts, it's less than 50%. In 7 of the 48 districts, it's less than 50%. In 25, or slightly more than half the district, it's less than two-thirds have reached that level of proficiency. And I really wonder, you know, I like enrichment. I like doing things for the better students. But I really wonder, at a time when we're having trouble getting the core mission done for so many of our students, Mr. Chairman, I wonder if it's wise to go into these extra things and keep throwing money at the problem. Maybe this program, summer program, is reaching that core problem, but as I heard the explanation of the bill, I don't think it is. And I think we're going to have to start thinking long and hard, because there is not an endless well of money out there. Now, school foundation program depends on property tax in good part, and that lags severance tax by about a year, the way our tax system works. So it's probably next year that the foundation program will get hit harder than it is this year. But I really wonder if we need to start pulling back and thinking about some of these things and concentrating on why aren't we getting the job done on the basics.
Majority Floor Leader Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'm not really going to engage in the debate as to whether this is worth the money or not. I'll leave that up to the body to decide. I would like to take a minute or two, though, in regard to supporting the bill from the standpoint of whether or not we should attempt to do something like this for this level of children. You know, quite often when we looked at the No Child Left Behind, there was a lot of debate about raising the bar as compared to raising the band. By raising the bar, you take those individuals that are below the bar and you get them over, and you continue to give your attention to getting them over the bar without regard to how much achievement potential might be there for other children. I hesitate to use the term bright or gifted or capable or whatever, but there are some children that are capable of learning much and learning perhaps more, perhaps at a more rapid rate than others. And so when we just adjust most of our instructional practices and our resources to raising the bar, we sometimes lose sight of the band, which is the larger group of children. I would only say in regard to the performance that is quoted earlier by the good senator from Natrona County, I would ask you, perhaps the lack of performance is not giving the appropriate attention to those other children in the band, who probably, of all those groups of students, have greater capacity to raise the performance level than any of those others. So with that, without getting in a protracted conversation or a protracted dissertation about motivation, where these children find themselves, the proportion of those kinds of students that we might later find in our penitentiaries, and you'd be startled to know how many of our inmates are actually gifted, and as to how that giftedness applies if it's not appropriately directed. And so with that, I would say, without regard to whether it's worth the money or not, I'll leave that to you, but I would hope that you'd support the bill for the reasons I've just said.
Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, as to the good senator from Natrona County, I don't think this program is aimed at that one-third that are below standard. It's, although you often find nuggets of gold in the ore, and sometimes that's where you find the true genius. That's where you do find the level of attention that will then direct itself other ways. But I don't think that's necessarily the aim of this bill. I do like the bill, but I do have some specific questions. My initial question was asked by the good senator from Fremont County about the ongoing nature of this. But if this is the third year of this program, what were the previous amounts that were spent? This is $450,000, I believe. Is that a like amount to what it has been in the previous 3 years? And the other question I have during the introductory remarks on this bill by the chairman of the Education Committee, he mentioned that 27 school districts had participated in this. Were there more requests than there was money, and how much? And it's a little fuzzy in my mind. I'm not that familiar with this program. But who in the Education Department decides who gets how much money? And because I would think as more districts learn this money is available, there are going to be more requests. And I'm just kind of curious as to who is the donor of the funds.
Senator Goh.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and thanks to the good senator from Sheridan County who alluded to the fact that this has nothing to do with summer school remedial. This is the students that have achieved. They want to further enrich what they're trying to do. They had 50 applications the last time to the good senator from Sheridan, from 27 Wyoming school districts, requesting over $2.5 million. The request ranged, again, I'll say, from $3,120 to $217,000. This is the third year of the program, and there has been $450,000 each year in it. I hope that answers your question.
Senator Schiffer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Going to page 4, lines 9 through 11, how do they judge the effectiveness? Let's see, they have to have evaluation instruments and then establish for determining program effectiveness. How do they do that in terms of this group of children and considering the programs that you've got out there? What are the criteria, and are they the same for all 27 school districts, or are they different? What's the deal on whether we're getting our money?
Senator Crowe.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this is not an economic development bill, I'll tell the good senator from Johnson County. The Department of Education goes through when they receive the reports back and through the application process and determines if it's above and beyond what the programs are that are in the block grant, in the basket. This is an enrichment type program. There's a school district in Converse County that studied, for example, let me find it real quick here. Say it for me.
Paleontology.
And they got a $25,000 grant. That was Converse County School District number 2. That's not an ordinary program you find out there. So Department of Education is the entity that determines through the application process how they're going to award the grants and whether or not it's worthwhile or not.
I missed you before, Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the good chairman's basically explained it, but I would like to have a little better understanding. It seems to be such a variety in the amount of funding, and I see the criteria there, but does a lot of it come back to the initiative of that original school district, their initiative to get out there, make the program work, get the funding for it, and show the numbers that succeed? Does it fall back responsibility on the original school district to get after it and go after that program.
Senator Coe.
Chairman, the fallback comes back to the district when it reports back to the effectiveness of the program to the Department of Education. That's where the determination happens with the fallback. At least that's my recollection of the testimony that we had on this particular entity. And I hope that answers your question.
Senator Burns.
But the other question I asked is exactly who in the Department of Education makes this decision? Is it a committee? Is it one person? Is there a department? Are there people who are being specifically reimbursed or remunerated for judging this decision? Is there a department within the department that's doing this? I'm kind of being faced by just a big wall saying the Department of Education.
Majority Floor Leader Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Without any pretense of trying to be an expert, I will just share a little bit of the experience that I have in regard to these type programs, how they're written, how they're evaluated, and then with a bit of speculation as to how they might be dealt with by the State Department. What usually happens in this instance is the school district sees the need for something like this, and they will sit down and write a program in regard to perhaps paleontology as one that I witnessed in my district. And they write a pretty extensive program as to what they would do with this type of children. And I will say, or these type of children, that the program in Glen Rock, even though it was an enrichment program, they went into paleobiology and actually took some of the students that had failed in the traditional high school biology, and by making it a tactile, tangible program in the summer where you could get outside, dig bones, identify other things, classify, and what engaged those kids that were really very bright kids but unsuccessful academically because of whatever reason, and engaged them successfully in a program of paleobiology, and then brought them back in and in the afternoon spent that time in the classroom and assessed them by a predetermined set of objectives or criteria that was already established that had been accepted as part of the program. And then those kids were then evaluated against those objectives that were predetermined in that program. Now, it may not always be necessarily a traditional means of paper, pencil, and tests, type tests. In many instances, they use what you would refer to as a portfolio standard, and in doing that project through the summer, maybe they had to reconstruct a skeleton. Maybe they had to do some sort of graph in regard to depth and detail of the dig, and I can go on and on and on. But there's a research component to that, that if that were taken through different levels, it could be taken from, say, a freshman in high school had failed biology, and what was acceptable for him to write up a research project, clear up to a graduate-level student who might want to write a PhD thesis on a particular endangered species. To get directly at the question, the standards for evaluation are determined at the time the grant is written. That's evaluated by the State Department. Students go through the program. State Department comes back, looks at the assessment criteria to see if, in fact, the program has been successful, the children have been successful, and it evaluates them on predetermined standards that were given in the original grant proposal. It would be as varied as the program is varied, as the subject is varied, but that would essentially be, I think, by a group of, quote, more expert people than I in the state that could determine whether the program was worthy in the beginning and whether or not they'd achieved their standards. Thank you.
Any additional questions? We're on the bill. All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion, that when... Sorry about that, Senator Coe. I'm gonna start from the beginning. All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 42, please say aye. Those opposed, no. Senate File 42 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for consideration is Senate File 51.
Senate File 51, sponsored by Senator Anderson, Official State Code, an act relating to state symbols. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Coe, Jennings, Massey, Sessions, Von Flader, and Senator Coe, Chairman.
Senator Coe, what is your pleasure?
Chairman, I move in the committee of the whole rise and report it do so with the do pass recommendation on Senate File 51. There is a standing committee amendment. I would move that amendment at this time and ask that it be read in.
Senate File 51, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 13.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, on the amendment, that's just a grammatical correction. It's a minor correction we found in committee, and I'd ask for the question on the amendment at this time.
All of those in favor of Senator Coe's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, To the Senate File 51, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The Standing Amendment Number 1 is passed. We're back to the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I would defer to Mr. Majority Floor Leader for an explanation.
Majority Floor Leader Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, since the 3-minute introduction period lends itself more to style, perhaps, than to substance, I'll try to talk a little bit in regard to the substance of the bill that I have brought before you, and without being redundant or repeating too many of the remarks that I made upon introduction. For a second, when we talk about those symbols that represent our culture and perhaps our Western heritage, I'd like for you to just take a moment just to stop and think about those things that you value in Wyoming or about Wyoming the most. Not going to take a test, but just stop and think of those things that you value most about this state. And as you do that, I would suspect that in many instances you saw perhaps the Tetons or wide open space or all those things that in Wyoming your favorite elk hunting ground or their picture of that elk that you've always wanted to get, all those things. Well, down through history, as we have written the history and written the documentation of our state, we've chosen certain symbols. We've chosen the buffalo to occupy the spot that it occupies on our flag. I won't take time to articulate to me or to you what the buffalo means to you or to me, but you all have an idea of why the buffalo is there. We have also the bucking horse, and there's some people out there would like to take the bucking horse, remove the buffalo, and put the bucking horse on the flag. But the idea is that we have for some reason chosen the bucking horse to put on our license plates. We have actually gone so far as to have a trademark placed upon that. And we could go on, to the state bird, the meadowlark. We'd go to the state flower, the Indian paintbrush, and on through all these symbols that exemplify our feelings about what represents Wyoming. You can even look around this building, you look around this room, and you look at all the art, look at all the pictures. And that's another example of how we exemplify those things that have occurred in our history and our heritage and speak to what Wyoming is to you and to me and to others. Well, most of these things are pretty tangible. You can see them, feel them, touch them. The chocolate chip cookie was a bill some time ago. I guess you could probably taste that one. Well, Mr. Chairman, maybe this code that I'm talking about is somewhat less tangible, but I submit to you that it's no less important. The code, I think, addressed some of the values, the ethics, and in many cases, as like these pictures of people on the wall, and many of you are in those pictures along with me and others, exemplify the people that have represented the state of Wyoming through all these years, but then I would say the values, the ethics, and other things that they carried with them that made Wyoming what it is. This code of ethics that I present to you has been chosen and used and represented in the business practices of some of the most prominent benefactors that we have in our state, and I cannot, will not name them on this floor, but there are football fields and other facilities that are named after these benefactors who feel that this code of ethics gives them a standard of practices in their business by which they can be trusted and which you can virtually, you know, bank on their conduct. You have, I think, handed out to you a letter from the University of Wyoming School of Business, and that was offered in regard to all the emphasis that they're putting on ethics and their teaching of business in the college at the university, and those ethics are based upon the same code that I have brought before you. And if you were fortunate enough to have made the trip to the university this last weekend, you will see within the very heart of the business college where these ethics will be housed in a Western setting, being placed upon the wall as a reminder to those students the value of ethics in the practice of business as they go out into the world. So many times, and even today in some of our leadership conversations, we become frustrated as policymakers in making policy, rules, reg, and laws, and then send it out and have it gamed by the system. And then so we sit down as we try to bring other proposals out and try to determine how is it can we set up roadblocks, barriers, in order to stop the gaming. Well, I submit to you that we're never going to stop the gaming, that rules will always bend, will be bent, but the idea is principles cannot, will not be bent. So if we want to encourage better ethical practice throughout the industry or society, we need something that will touch the deepest part of us with something that makes us want to do better and actually be better than we are. So, Mr. Chairman, these principles within the code that I bring before you today, they're not to be embraced as a matter of religious or even intellectual beliefs, but these so-called rules of the range are really not rules. They have more to do with character, principles, values, and they're most and best reflected through the action of those people who choose to adopt them. If you saw yesterday's local paper, you would have seen a column in regard to the origin of many of these codes. And there's actually more into the code, a couple that I'll share with you that are not in the code that I present to you in the bill. But it says, never miss a chance to shut up. So, Mr. Chairman, I think that opportunity has come, and I would leave these principles to you and ask for your favorable consideration.
All right. Are we ready for the question? Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not particularly fond of bills like this, but having sponsored the official state butterfly bill last year, I don't think I'm really in a position to complain. But I do have a question on page 2, line 11. Could I get a more definitive definition of ride for the brand, please? Especially related to the business school.
Majority floor leader.
Mr. Chairman, I will give you my definition, and as it is, principles applied by individuals, but the way that I would apply this principle, it speaks to loyalty. And when it means ride for the brand, it means that you're loyal to the person that you work for. You're loyal to the job that you've been called upon to do. You're loyal to the person that employs you. And you're loyal to the principle of the cause that you've been called upon to deliver. So essentially, I think riding for the brand is loyalty. If I were to be called upon what riding for the brand is, I've been elected by this constituency of Senate District number 2. And when I come down here, I never forget who brought me to the dance. I ride for that brand, Senate District number 2. That's who I ride for.
I heard a call for the question. Are we ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate file number 51, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate file 51 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill is Senate file 26. I'm passing it to the reader.
Senate file number 26, sponsored by Senator Case. Eligibility concealed weapons permit, an act relating to crimes and offenses. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Senators Burns, S. Meyer, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions, Senator Ross, Chairman.
Senator Ross, what is your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 26, eligibility, concealed weapons permit, and would yield the floor to the primary sponsor, the senior senator from Fremont County.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I bring before you Senate File 26, Eligibility Concealed Weapons Permits. Mr. Chairman, this is a bill that I'm bringing on behalf of the executive branch and concealed permit weapons holders across the state of Wyoming. Our law with regard to concealed weapons permits is one of the older laws, actually, and many states have passed laws subsequent to Wyoming. A key part of the concealed carry permit apparatus is the notion of reciprocity and how our state views other states' laws and how our law is viewed in other states. And if we can have a reciprocal agreement, is the microphone working, Mr. Majority Floor Leader? Okay. Thank you. If we can have a reciprocal agreement, then our permit holders can carry their weapon concealed and legally in up to 23 other states. Another advantage of the permit system for concealed carry is that it allows people that hold a permit. The permit substitutes for the federal background check required to purchase a firearm. So there's kind of two advantages. It's important for people to have this permit. They work very hard at it. They're very responsible. And we've had very good success with permittees and their conduct. There's a small issue involving how other states have put in their laws. The issue, by and large, surrounds the notion of controlled substances and misdemeanor convictions. Wyoming's law is pretty straightforward as it's currently written. It basically says that a person has not been committed to a state facility for the abuse of controlled substances and has not been convicted of the Wyoming Controlled Substance Act of 1971. It doesn't say what type of conviction. It doesn't say misdemeanor. It doesn't say felony. It just says you haven't been convicted. So really what this meant, and I misspoke in the Judiciary Committee because I thought it was a five-year prohibition, this truly is a lifetime prohibition if you're ever convicted of a misdemeanor crime for a controlled substance. Okay? Lifetime ban on getting a concealed weapon. You know, and we can take that stand. That's something we could do, and we could be that strict. But the problem is 20 other states and the federal government are not that strict. And so our attorney general has a dilemma. When they look at where it says that in order to grant a concealed weapons reciprocity to another state, the other state must have laws that are similar to Wyoming's law, they have a dilemma. Is the fact that it's a misdemeanor conviction of which 1 year has passed according to that other state law similar to Wyoming's lifetime ban? Well, we've had various attorney generals in that office. They've approached it differently. This attorney general says, I'm having trouble with this one. And he very nearly last year said, I refuse to recognize reciprocity with 20 out of the 23 states. But that's the dilemma. That caused quite an outcry, as you can imagine, among our friends that are very vocal with regards to the Second Amendment and their right to keep and bear arms. So we sort of reached a compromise, said, you know, too late to get a bill in this session. Let's see if we can get a bill in the next session, get it passed to fix this issue. And if we can fix this issue, and the Attorney General can stand in good faith and grant reciprocity. That's exactly what this bill does, Mr. Chairman. And so it goes in and conforms Wyoming's laws to the lower standards of 20 other states. And it says that if a year has passed from completing the entirety of your conviction, you can receive a concealed weapons permit. That's what the bill does. There's one other section, and that has to be whether you've ever been in rehab. Again, we had a lifetime conviction. This is, it follows the other states and the federal government, and it's a 1 year since post-conviction. These are misdemeanors, though. Let me just point that out. What is a misdemeanor crime doesn't rise to the level that traditionally causes you to lose your rights in the United States of America. One more thing I need to say to make the whole package clear to you is that there are members of very respected organizations that support the right to keep and bear arms that would like to go farther with this bill. And they would like to use this bill to eliminate entirely the Attorney General having any say whatsoever on whether we recognize reciprocity. I'm trying to find out if that change to this bill would jeopardize reciprocity in a backdoor way, because other states would be able to say, well, Wyoming doesn't actually have anybody that checks this, so we're not going to recognize their law. Now, that's just speculation on my part, and as this bill unfolds in the next two readings, we'll get more answers. And so for now, I think we should try to find out the truth. There is another bill in another body of this legislature that provides for the ability to carry a concealed weapon without regard to a permit at all. And if that passes, that will allow citizens of Wyoming to have a concealed weapon without a permit. It may have other things in the law that says their qualifications, but they won't need a permit if that bill passes. So in the end, you might end up with a dual system. You can apply for and receive a permit, which has the advantage of the background check substitution, and also would give you reciprocity in other states. And people like that. I assure you, concealed gun owners like that. Or you could apply and carry under the other law that may become law this session. We'll get a chance to evaluate that. I would suggest that the proposal to amend into this bill, eliminating the Attorney General and the sheriffs and everybody from checking on people with regards to the permit system, sort of blends the two bills together. And I'm not sure that that's necessarily good policy, and I'd like to explore that more before we get too far down any proposed amendments with respect to eliminating the executive branch authority. I'd be happy to stand for questions. I appreciate the time, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Ross, I have a question. There's an amendment that is pending that I don't believe has ever been moved. It is a committee of the whole. Okay. Thank you. Senator Meyer, I understand it's a committee of the whole amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I move committee of the whole amendment number 1 to Senate file 26.
Will the reader read the amendment?
Senate File 26, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 5, line 6.
Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, what this amendment does is on line number 6 on page 5. And what this does, it just moves up the date of when this is enacted. And the reason why this is important is because our Attorney General needs this so that it would be an immediate working of this bill. So I appreciate your consideration of this, and what it does is, upon completion of all necessary for acts for a bill to become law, as provided by Article 4, Section 8 of the Wyoming Constitution. So I urge your passage of this bill, of this amendment, so that this could become law immediately. Thank you.
All those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 26, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, has passed. We're back on the bill. All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 20, say aye. Those opposed, no. Senate File 26 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Chairman, in light of the fact the Appropriations Committee has been off the floor working diligently to get more bills for us to work, even though we only have one bill, I'm going to ask for a short break here for staff, and then we can kind of let them, the Appropriations Committee, kind of get collected, and then we're going to come back in after the motion about 15 minutes and work Senate File 63. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would move that the Senate beg leave to rise and set again in about 15 minutes for the purpose of a 15-minute break.
You've heard the recommendation and the motion from the Majority Leader. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. So ordered. No, I know. We've got to get some more in. Will the Senate come to order, please? Next bill for consideration under the Committee of the Whole is Senate File Number 63.
Senate File Number 63, sponsored by Senator C. Meyer, Irrigation Districts Assessment, an Act Relating to Water.
Chairman Geis.
Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, I move that Senate File 63 do pass. And we also have a standing committee amendment I'd like read in, and I would move that. And then I'll yield the floor to Senator Meyer to explain the bill.
Will the reading clerk read the amendment?
I have to read in the committee report first. It was assigned to Committee Number 5, Agricultural, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass, amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Geis, Elliott, Geis, Jennings, and Johnson, Senator Geis, Chairman.
Now, if you'll read the amendment.
Senate File 63, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, corrected copy, page 3, line 1.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'll really go right to the standing committee amendment. That really is the bill at this point in time. We did make this amendment for a couple of reasons. One, the assessors had a little bit of a problem with their timing and getting their special assessments out because they send them out normally with the tax rolls, and they normally did that, they told us, in August or early September. And if we allowed the districts to go till October, then they wouldn't be able to send those out at the same time. So what we did is that we took the new language out and put this language, which is almost identical, at the end. And the language basically allows the districts to establish their assessments and operating and maintenance amounts and their due date, but it's provided that they do it after the third Monday of July, which is the current language, and before the third Monday of October, which was the proposed language. But in order to do that, they had to be responsible for the billing and the collection of special assessments and the operating and maintenance charges. And this is primarily what the districts that asked me to bring this bill forward wanted to do. Now, these are for the assessments for the next succeeding year, and so they're not for the previous year, so all the water that's been delivered will be have to be paid for before the next year. And basically this allows them to have their billing and filling periods match up so they know what the full price is of the full amount of water that was delivered. So with that explanation, I would ask for the body's favorable consideration.
Senator Geis, did you move the amendment?
Yes, I did.
Previously? I thought you did. Just wanted to verify. All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File Number 63, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment has passed. We are now back on the bill. Question on the bill. All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File Number 63, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File Number 63 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Leader. You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion is carried. Mr. President.
Reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. Senate File 18, do pass amended. Senate File 37, do pass amended. Senate File 9, do pass amended. Senate File 31, do pass amended. Senate File 22, do pass amended. Senate File 42, do pass. Senate File 51, do pass amended. Senate File 26, do pass amended. And Senate File 63, do pass amended. Senator Elliott, Chairman.
Senator Elliott.
Mr. President, I move for the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion has been adopted. Reports from standing committees.
February the 15th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred Senate File 76, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin, Senator Larson, Chairman. February the 15th, 2010, Mr. President, your Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred Senate File 32, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Honeycutt, Landon, and Scott, no, Senator Schiffer, Senator Scott, Chairman. February the 15th, 2010, Mr. President, your Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred Senate File 50, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Honeycutt, Schiffer, and Scott. No, Senator Landon, Senator Scott, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate adjourn until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. 10 a.m.
Senator Cove.
President, your Committee Number 4, Education, will meet tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. 9 o'clock for those members. To deal with House Bill 55, Elementary Foreign Language Instruction, and House Bill 48, School Finance Audits Amendment.
Burns.
Mr. President, your Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will meet tomorrow at 20 minutes upon noon recess up in room S14, where we will discuss Senate File 70, Local Prohibition of Poker, and Senate File 78, Illegal Fish Stocking, and not fish wearing stockings.
Senator Von Platen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee Number 8, Transportation and Military Affairs, will meet in 5 after the hour in about 10 minutes to review Senate File 64, Safety Belt Violations 2, Senate File 56, Fuel Tax Bonds, Senate File 62, Veterans Burial, and Senate File 71, Disposal of Remains Military Personnel.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your Corporations Committee number 7 has a date with Destiny tomorrow at 8 a.m. in S-19 to hear these following exciting bills. Senate File 34, Continuation of Insurance Coverage. Senate File 57, Telephone Solicitations, Cell Phones. Senate File 27, Government Competition. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, your Revenue Committee number 3 will meet tomorrow, February 16th, 30 minutes after noon recess in room S-16 up in the scenic corner of the Capitol to take up Senate File 74, Subdivisions, Parcels.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Appropriations Committee number 2 will meet about 4:15 up in room S-16. And consider several bills, Senate File 72, Wyoming Retirement Plan Contributions 2, Senate File 75, School District Health Insurance 2, Senate File 2, Appropriations for the Legislature, Senate File 35, Tolling Authority for I-80, Senate File 69, Natural Resource Large Project Funding, and Senate File 36, Gillette Madison Water Project. And probably end sometime tomorrow morning.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, can I have a privilege of the floor for some
You time? May.
Mr. President, maybe you noted this tall, lonesome stranger over here all day, but I'd just like for you to meet, or I would like to introduce to you Brad Reese. Brad is a local rancher, outfitter, school board member, and all-around pretty good guy. So would you please welcome Brad to the Senate? He's going to spend some time with me, be around for a few days.
Welcome, Brad. We're glad to have you. You've heard the motion that the Senate stand adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The Senate is adjourned.